There has never been a golden age. There has never been a time where Christianity was perfect and in charge and all those kinds of things. There's never been a generation without significant challenges caused by sin. You have to understand that if you picked an evil that you wanted to address in the world, and you dedicated every waking moment of your life, you addressed it the entirety of your life, it won't make any difference. The only rational response to that, if you're going to fully look in the face of that reality, all of which is 100% true, the only rational response to that is madness or despair. God has promised that every bad thing that you see is going to be fully redeemed. Yeah, I'm going to fight this fight, not because I'm going to fix it, but because the one I serve will, and I get to participate in the fixing. I think that transforms everything.
Welcome back to the Be Unbound podcast, where we discuss practical Christian living, how to build thriving communities, and to be extraordinary at the ordinary. I'm your co-host, David Rethemeyer.
And I'm your co-host, Jonathan Brush.
And Jonathan, it has continued to be convention season. You have been on the road quite a bit recently. So you and I were on the road to Illinois not too long ago, and then you just went down to HEAV in Virginia, and you were out at the Rocky Mountain Homeschool Convention out in Colorado. So you've been going a lot of places, man. How's that been going?
Yeah, I think that I calculated that I have been home not even full days, but 7 days out of the last month. And I did something like 22 speaking engagements in 20 days or something like that. So,
wow.
Which I was quick to point out, as I stated that, is a blessing. Like in other words, mm-hmm. David asked me, we got on this, you know, how you doing? I said, I'm tired, but I'm tired. Like I'm tired after you get done stacking wood. Like, you're pleasantly tired, but you're pleased with it. And so it was been a really blessed travel season. Maybe some of you listening, I got to meet on the road and thoroughly enjoyed that. And just really had a great time meeting people at the booth, at the sessions. So we did some other events as well, besides those conventions in between. And then, David, the travel season this year, every single flight that I was on time. So I don't remember the last time that happened. And the last flights through Atlanta were crazy. Everybody, I guess World Cup stuff was going on. And so, like, I've never seen Atlanta so packed. And everybody mm-hmm. talking about the World Cup, and it was really kind of interesting. And yet still everything was on time. So feeling really blessed with all that.
Wow. Yeah, that you cannot take that for granted at this point. Like there is
never
no
take
way.
It for granted. I'm always slightly, surprised when, we're sitting on the runway and then we actually leave. And I'm like, whoa, that was an on time departure.
Yeah.
I can't believe it. So,
yeah. Yeah, I'm curious, Jonathan, with when you have speaking engagements like this, whether it's at conventions or our Thrive events that we have or anything like that, when you go out and speak, is that something that is like energizing for you? Is that something that's really exhausting? Because you've been doing this for a really long time. Like what is kind of like, how does that affect just like your overall energy level when you're going out and doing these things?
Yeah, that's a great question. I love doing these things. So, and there's a couple reasons for it. I do like speaking. It's an interesting thing, and it's a great opportunity to say this. Some of you listening probably came up to me after this and said, oh, thank you for that. And I appreciate that. That's super kind of you. I always feel so strange when that happens, though, because I have the exact opposite reaction, which is every time I go in a room and there's an audience, I am just overwhelmed with gratitude. And I joke sometimes with people and they say, thank you. And I say, well, thank you. It's no fun giving these things if nobody's in the room. So first of all, it's fun to have somebody there. But also as a speaker, because there's an audience and because there's a speaking session coming up, I get this opportunity to look really deeply into some aspect of life, something that we do with Unbound or something we've learned. I have to study that. I have to think about it. I have to break it down. I have to then understand it well enough to communicate it well. And then when somebody comes to listen, I get to see the reaction and I either see people zone out like, what happened? What's he talking about? Or react and get excited. And I know that I'm on and I'm making sense. And so what happens then is that the audience, by showing up, has given me this unique opportunity to learn something new, to hone it and to work on it and to figure it out and then to really learn it. And then I get the unique blessing of being able to take something that God has gifted me and share it so that other people can learn from it. I just think that's an extraordinary gift. And I just never take it for granted. Every single time we have an audience, honestly, anytime somebody listens to this podcast, certainly when somebody shows up live and in person, as we're recording this, we have a really huge webinar that we're doing tonight. When people come to those webinars, I just am grateful beyond words. And so that part is energizing. I also enjoy meeting people. And so I've met some of my best friends and some really super cool people at conventions and places who come up afterwards and talk to and strike up conversations. And then just from an Unbound standpoint, you really get to see if your ideas make sense, if the kind of things we're doing resonates when you're actually talking to somebody. And the good news is it does. And so we had a really phenomenal year with just people coming up and being excited about what we're doing. And so that keeps us driven and excited about, you know, we're already excited about our work, but when we get to share it and see people go, yes, I need that. And we're like, good, because we know how it works and we see the results of it. And so we're so excited to welcome those people in. So all that to say, David, yes, energizing, but also this profound sense of gratefulness every time I'm in a room and people are there. I can't get over that. I never take it for granted. So.
Well, that's really cool. And I'm glad that you shared that, partially because I think it's just interesting to hear that perspective from somebody who's been doing it for a really long time. And also, I want to use that to lead into the question that I think that we should tackle for this episode, which is, why should we have hope? Because you were just talking to me a little bit earlier about just the contrast that you felt, especially when you were hearing feedback from people after your sessions about how hopeful your sessions were. And, obviously, I think that is because, at least in my opinion, you are great at delivering a message that has hope in it in your sessions, but also because it sounded like there is just a profound lack of hope in what people are hearing from everywhere else and just what they are feeling themselves. So I'd be curious to just have you share with the listeners here about what you've noticed specifically in that realm. This week, we are introducing a new segment that we are tentatively calling the Wild Card segment. That name may change at some point, but basically, it is just a little segment of the show that's going to be a little bit different each time. It's going to be a little bit more lighthearted, and I think it's just going to present us with the opportunity to showcase something fun or interesting that we may have come across or feel like talking about recently. And so the prompt for this week was for Jonathan and I both to take a look at the wild, wild west that is Facebook Marketplace for both of us, and to see what is potentially the weirdest or most interesting thing that we can happen to find on there. So, Jonathan, I'll let you go first. What have you found?
Well, I had to go with interesting. Of all the times, Facebook Marketplace didn't give me anything weird. They gave me a lot of weird stuff, but not today, David. But this is a 2008, so you know it fits into my category. This is pre-2018, right? Mm-hmm. It's a Ford E350, so this is, my DNA is bonded with E350 mm-hmm. steering wheels at this point. Yep. It's got 135,621 miles on it. It's okay. Diesel, which is the rare 2008 diesel. But here, this is what gets cool. It's a 6.0 diesel ambulance converted to a camper.
Wait, what?
So this is an ambulance converted to a camper. So you get all the stories, the outside stories of that, a couch that folds down into a full bed, all kinds of internal storage, its own little extra lounge chair in the back. It says it's ready for your next adventure. Must see the build to appreciate it.
Yeah, I mean, for one thing, I can't even see the build right now. We're just describing these to each other, but it already sounds like something I would appreciate. And what are they asking for it?
Oh, yeah, that's $11,750.
That's not that bad, honestly. I mean,
that's not bad for a Ford E350 with less than 150,000 miles on a 6.0 diesel. I mean, that thing's got another 200,000 miles before it even needs worked on. And yet they've got the whole camper build in the back. David, we could be going in style to the next convention. One of us could be driving, next one could be lounging in the back. And if we're late, I think it's still got lights. Yeah, it's hit the right button and we can clear traffic.
Oh, that's incredible. I mean, hey, if nothing else, it would be a pretty massive upgrade over the 2025 Grand Wagoneer that you had quite strong feelings about.
I imagine it would beep at me less. Yeah, absolutely.
Fantastic. Okay, well, that is really cool. I think that's an awesome find. The find that I have is nowhere near as cool. It is solidly in the I don't know why this exists, let alone is being sold on Marketplace category. So Jonathan, I want you to imagine one of those large kind of round cylindrical, almost like pill shaped water tanks that are just like outside of houses. You know what I'm talking about? So take one of those and you have it like flipped. So it's like vertical and you have little feet and you have pipes attached to the side as arms. And then you have it painted yellow. And
is it like what are those things called? The
have you ever seen the movie Despicable Me?
Yeah, that's
featuring
the
Minions.
Minions. I kept wanting to say Munchkins. I was like, that's Wizard of Oz. That's not right. Minions. Yeah, Minions. So
no. So somebody in Midlothian, Virginia, has taken a massive steel water, just like water container and water tank, and has made it into a model of a minion. And like it has steel feet. It has like pipes for arms that are raising. It has like the little band and it has googly eyes in it and everything. They are asking $300 for it.
Well, $300. When you said three, I was wondering. So how tall is it?
So they don't give exact measurements. Like he's just kind of showing off some of his welds, which I'm frankly not very impressed by. But if I had to guess, it's probably like 3.5-4 feet tall, something like that. It really is something. I don't know whether
is there like a hidden marketplace for homemade minions? That's what I want to know. Like what is the, you've got to track it. How long does it say it's been listed?
Listed 2 weeks ago.
Oh, I mean, that's not super long. I mean, like, you know, so.
That's a good question. The condition says used good. I don't know what this, in this context, it would be for it to be used in great condition or in, you know, like new condition.
Yeah, like what's like new is right off the shop floor. I mean, used for what? I mean, used for decoration?
Great question. I have no idea what this was used for, but.
Does it come with, copyright infringement papers or
nope. The description is also the spelling in the description is very interesting. Monions, not minions, monions. Handmade that, out of
that's your copyright
tank.
Protection right there. So
right there you go. Even though the caption is just minion, steel feet, fun and funny. And so if you're in the Midlothian, Virginia area, that can be yours for $300.
We get a package deal here. We could put the minion in the back of the ambulance and haul it somewhere. So
That sounds like a great idea. Traditional education doesn't work for everyone. If you or your student wants something different, check out Ascend by Unbound. With flexible courses, real-world projects, mentorship, and community, Ascend equips young adults to thrive academically, professionally, and personally. Students consistently say that the close-knit support and resume-ready experience are their favorite parts. Enrollment prices rise soon, so don't wait. Find your track at beunbound.us/ascend. I'd be curious to just like have you share with the listeners here about like what you've noticed specifically in that realm.
Yeah, this was, I just found this remarkable, David. We've been talking about it as a staff. You and I have had a couple of conversations about it. It started in Illinois. We were there and we had people come up to us afterwards. They come up to me and they said, the first lady said, I just really enjoyed this. You say things that nobody else says. And I just want you to know, my immediate reaction to that was one of extreme nervousness. When you're saying things that nobody else says, there's a distinct possibility that you're crazy, that you're completely off base and you don't know what you're talking about. And so I didn't have this kind of reaction like, oh, isn't that nice? I had this reaction like, oh my goodness, what am I saying? And so when it happened a time or two again, I got smart enough and kind of recovered a little bit enough to say, what am I saying that you're not hearing anybody else anywhere else? And the answer, and so I asked this then for the rest of convention season, the answer was, well, you have, and it was phrased a couple of different ways, but it's mostly you have a message of hope, of optimism, of a positive outlook. And David, I found that really interesting because as far as I can tell, and I went back and even looked at some of my past presentations and some of my notes from that, I don't know that I changed anything radically this year. In other words, I feel like I'm saying close to what I've been saying, at least in the core themes for several years here. And so there's something that changed in the audience that all of a sudden is starving for hope in a way that I don't think they were last year or 2 years ago, or 3 years ago. And I found that really interesting. It's an interesting commentary on where people seem to be. And then there was an interesting contrast where a lot of speakers feel the need. And I want to say this carefully. I'm not saying this in a condemning way. There is necessary. I mean, I'm reading Ezekiel now, David, and Ezekiel, there is not a message necessarily of hope. There's a message of warning at the front part of Ezekiel, where God is saying, pay attention to me. Let me explain to you the bad things that are going on and what's going to happen about that. So there is a necessity for that. And speaking that and talking about those things are important things. But it's interesting that it often is then left in this vacuum where there is a articulate summary of all the things that are going wrong and badly, but there's no resolution to that. And that's the part that was really disturbing to me as I was on the road this year.
Yeah. It's, I don't think that those who are listening, I think, would have to look very far to just see the tone of hopelessness that just exists in our culture. And just, you know, all you have to do is just scroll through any news website, any social media site to just see a barrage of posts and voices telling you how awful things are. And so I don't think, at least personally, it's surprising to me that there is just as much hopelessness as there is. I guess my wondering is, especially since, you know, especially when you're going around to these conventions and things, these are mostly Christian audiences. And I think it's telling that even amongst Christians, there is just sort of this undercurrent of hopelessness as well. And I'm curious as to your thoughts on what the source of that is, because I don't think it's unusual or surprising to us if the world at large is hopeless. I think it's a little bit more unusual and a little bit worth digging into why we might feel that, a largely Christian population is feeling hopelessness.
So I've been thinking about this, David. In fact, I actually had a meeting this morning and I was discussing this with one of our alumni who is now a pastor, and we were kind of kicking this around and having a conversation about it. And, this is speculative, so listeners, please hear me. I've not done deep research on this. I'm to some extent thinking out loud here, but I feel like this comes out of an anomaly. And so, longtime listeners will know that I have, you know, a lot of warnings about being aware of anomalies. And that anomaly would be that there was a post-war cultural zeitgeist, if you will, in America that was predominantly Christian. And so for a period of time, Christians felt like they owned the cultural levers of power and that they were in control of their destiny and that was right as it should be. And there's a whole, you know, series of podcasts we talk about that. And then Roe v. Wade happened. And so all of a sudden, abortion was legal. The culture wars began. And then there was this sense of, you know, a precipitous and ongoing decline in terms of Christians' cultural power. And since it had been so overwhelming, or at least the impression had been so overwhelming prior to that, the shock of it, right, the anomaly reversing itself was disorienting to many folks. And in that became a rise of people who were articulating the problems that were very real. And again, what I said before, there's a need for somebody to articulate that. But I think as Christians, what happened was that we have now created an entire cadre of people who are really good at articulating the problems that are inherent in our society and world. And that is part of, I mean, there should be people who do that. That is a pastoral call. That is a leadership call. But somewhere in there, because of that continued decline, forgot to frame that in the context that I think is the only right context, meaning it is the only truthful context, which is that of hope. And one of the things that I say a lot on the road, and I believe in every cell of my body, is that we just have to deal with reality as it is. And the reality of it as it is that there has never been a golden age. There has never been a time where Christianity was perfect and in charge and all these kinds of things. There's never been a generation without significant challenges caused by sin post-Eden. In other words, since Adam and Eve were banished from the garden, there has never been any moment in history, and anywhere, anytime, any place, where sin wasn't a significant problem and the culture wasn't in some form of decline. And in fact, if we want to do compare and contrast, you know, we can look, and it doesn't take us long to find examples, including, you know, if you're reading Ezekiel of Jerusalem at that time, that in many ways are far worse than the things that we face now. But I think that the beginning of hope is actually a realization of reality, which is, yes, it is important to articulate the sin problem that our world faces and be aware of it and face it fully. But it is also essential to know that it's not unique, and that we should not, because I think part of the hopelessness comes from things are as bad as it's ever been. I don't think that's an honest statement. First of all, things have always been bad. And also, I think we can make some pretty solid arguments that things have been worse in many significant ways in other periods of time. And so, in answer to your question, I think the first thing is just this awareness, this perspective, this even historical reality of saying, okay, let's be honest about the actual condition of the world.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there seems to be this obsession over how can we be aware of all of the possible ways that the world is broken so that we can understand where all of the problems are coming from. And I think that that can often come from a very good place. I think it can sometimes come from a bad place of especially in terms of like virtue signaling, where like, you know, people will be like, oh, I'm more aware of the brokenness of society than, you know, most other people, which that's obviously unhealthy. But I think a lot of the time it does come from a place of just like want to understand like where people are suffering and hurting and how we can address that. But when we stop at, oh my goodness, there is a problem, and like we need people to be aware of it, and we don't look at, but how, like, what are the avenues that we use to actually fix that? And are we fixing problems? I think that's the part that is just so easy to overlook, is the problems that have already been fixed over time. And I think that that's true on a social level. I also think that's true on a personal level for us. You know, I find myself, it's just very easy for me to just only be looking at the problems that I have in what this present moment. And it's much more difficult for me to look back over the course of my life and say, wow, Lord, look at how many of these things that I thought were massive issues previously that you have now addressed and like are now in like such a completely different state. And so I think that it's very easy for us to have such a narrow view, only looking at the current problems, and for one thing, not looking at it in just the overall picture of, yes, this is bad, but look at how much bad we have overcome over from the past up until now, and seeing that. I was thinking about this earlier in context of just, for example, like, you know, zooming back out into just like the world in general. It's just so easy in our current culture to just think about how our world and our society is in decline, and just how many major issues that there are, and that our society is in collapse. And while I think it's valuable to look at the issues that are in our world, I think there's some things that we should just take into perspective that I just found interesting, because I just had somebody talk about these numbers to me earlier. So as far as just like overall, like the world's well-being, as far as people who are suffering from chronic hunger over the past 100 years, in 100 years ago, the number of people who were genuinely concerned about whether or not they will have enough to eat was around 40-50%. And today that is down to about 8-9%. That's massive.
Yeah. Keep going, David. But if you're listening to this, I just want you to like that one statistic alone should alter your perception of reality. Half the world's population was worried about dying of hunger, and we're below 10%. That is a stunning. Yeah, I've seen that statistic before. I've used it before. And the reason I use it, and I've seen it before, is because it is completely perception altering, if you know that. So continue, David.
Yes. Yeah. It gets even crazier. And so in access to clean drinking water, that we used to be in the mid 40% of the world had some sort of like filtered or had some sort of clean drinking water. Now about 75 to 80% of the water has safely managed drinking water, and at least 90% have some way to filter their water, some way to clean it up. So that is already massive. And then if you think about it, like in terms of access to overall healthcare, a percentage of people who 100 years ago had access to some form of healthcare was in the low teens. Now it is over half of the entire global population has ready access to some form of healthcare. And all that adds up to overall life expectancy. Today, I think that it would be, people could probably guess that average life expectancy globally is around 73 to 74 years old today. 100 years ago, 32.
That's more than
75. Yeah. That is well over double. So that just absolutely blows my mind. And I think when you take all of those things into consideration, I think it's just mind-blowing, and it helps just to put into perspective that, wow, there is actually a lot of improvement happening for a lot of people in the world that it's just very easy to miss out on.
So this hopelessness pervades us, and it does a lot of things, including these ideas of envy and bitterness. And so, you know, as we record this, Elon Musk just did the IPO for SpaceX and made him a trillionaire. And I just, the reaction to that is insane to me. And so there's so many people saying we should never have trillionaires. We should not. And they scream about the wealth inequality. You know, just a little context here, people. So you can have wealth inequality. Okay, so Elon's way richer than I will ever be. I don't think there's any chance that I'm even going to come within the same universe of Elon's personal net worth, right? There's some really interesting things to note that's not actually the money he has in his bank account. That's tied up in businesses. Those businesses create value that impacts all of us. But if you just want to have a quick contrast, you know where there's less wealth inequality? England. England has less wealth inequality. The United Kingdom has less wealth inequality than the United States. Do you know that England's average standard of living and poverty rate is worse than Mississippi, which is the lowest in the union? And so it's like there's an interesting question here. Why does it matter, the inequality between me and Elon Musk? Partly because of people like Elon Musk. Everybody in America has a higher standard of living than anywhere else in the world. And so if that means that there's some further stratification, then what happens here is that this idea of hopelessness causes us to focus on that thing and name it as some sort of injustice. I don't think it even is an injustice, but then it misses the reality of some of what David's saying. The average person in the United States lives a life that would have been beyond the scope of imagination of every king and every top 1%er that ever lived prior to about 100 years ago. Like it just the what we're doing now in terms of technology, it just things we take for granted. I mean, I was in a pressurized tube flying across the country 2 days ago at 600 miles per hour at 30,000 feet, and I was able to cross most of North America in less than a day. And it was statistically safer for me to enter that pressurized tube and hurtle through the skies at 600 miles an hour at 30,000 feet. It's statistically safer for me than walking across the street or walking down to my local convenience store, which for me would be a whale of a walk. But anyhow,
and almost any American can afford to do that.
Right. That's right. And then I was in Atlanta airport, and like every swath, I mean, like it used to be the airports, you would say like, it's just the elite that's in there. No, as you walk through the airport, you see every imaginable American. I mean, in terms of their dress and background and even the luggage that they're carrying, and they're almost all holding these devices that allow them to access the entirety of the world's information. I mean, just the wonder of the world. We just have somehow we're focused on these little things that we don't have. And we're just missing the stupendous, We were in the desert, the high desert in Denver, and we go anywhere and turn on the tap and water would come out of it. You know, in the middle of the day when it was hot, we were in air-conditioned buildings. One of the conventions I was at, you know, one of the rooms was a little hot, you know, hotter than normal. And you know, somebody asked something, what's the worst that's happened? And I said, well, the worst thing that happens is my room is hot. And they just fell over themselves. We're so sorry. We apologize for that. We're going to work to get a fan in there and all stuff. And I said, you've completely missed the context. Like, I mean, like, I'm telling you, like, this really complicated event that I flew across the country for that has all these moving parts. The worst thing that happened to me is the room that I was speaking in was about 10 degrees hotter than everybody wanted it to be. That's the worst thing. And we're in a desert and we're upset because we're not able to control the environment and make it completely perfectly comfortable. And instead it was, you know, hot enough to sweat a little. That's stunning. I mean, like, that, mm-hmm. just the potential there is stunning. David, as we recognize this reality, I was trying to think of an analogy, and this is maybe a poor analogy, but you know, have you ever met anybody that's like, well, I can't stand the sight of blood. And then like it cut. It's like, I can't look at it. And it's like, you know, I have my 2-year-old, you know, a couple months ago fell and smacked his head against a wooden porch board and split his eye open. Blood all over the place. And so, you know, there's an aspect of like, oh, I don't want to see that. And yet you need to see it. You need to look at it. And it's like, okay, this is not, I mean, there's a lot of blood, very little injury, no concussion, does need stitches, but we're not talking about like some sort of life-threatening thing. We're talking about, you know, a cut that is inconveniently gapped that we need to stitch so it looks good later. But you have to look at it to see that. And when you look at it, often you go, oh, that's not as bad as it looks. But also when you look at it, you go, now I know what to do about it. And so there's some aspect of this that I feel like as Christians, we have responsibility, and we talk about this all the time in Unbound, to be fully awake and fully alive. To look at the cut. And that means that we have to look at the world and we say, yeah, it's broken, busted, fallen, evil prevails. All those things are true. And then we tell our students, you have to take the next step and you have to go, you have to understand that if you picked an evil that you wanted to address in the world and you dedicated every waking moment of your life and you lived a near perfect life and you addressed it the entirety of your life, it won't make any difference. That the evil is so big that you can't do anything about it. And then it gets worse. The things that you don't control are far more influential in life than the things you do control. The things that you don't know will have more of an impact in your life than anything that you ever know. And then I'll take a step further and say, and the only rational response to that, if you're going to fully look in the face of that reality, all of which is 100% true, the only rational response to that is madness or despair. See any name brand German philosopher. And so you have to fully confront that. And so most people won't fully confront it because they don't want to go mad. So they find ways to insulate themselves against it. They numb themselves. They don't live fully awake and fully alive. They deliberately retreat into subconsciousness. They entertain themselves. They you know, get addicted to something. They say, don't look. I can't see the blood. I can't see the blood. I can't look at the cut. They hide from that reality. And as Christians, we are called to look fully in the face of that evil and accept it and realize it. But instead of despair and madness, we go, that's true. But it's not the truth. The truth is that we live in light of a hope that eclipses that evil. That God has promised that he will redeem all things, that he will create a new heaven and a new earth, that he will wipe away every tear, and that he will right every injustice, and that every bad thing that you see is going to be fully redeemed. And then it gets more amazing. God says that he's doing all that. So now all that pressure to fix evil, that's not you. You have nothing to do with it but you don't have to worry about it because God's already promised to fix it. But then God does something even more amazing. He says, and part of my fixing it is using you. So I ask you, invite you to be a part of the redemption of all things. It's not your responsibility to fix it. It's beyond your power. But I'm inviting you to be part of my plan to redeem all things. So now you have a mission and a purpose. And so what I told audiences at the conventions is that, you know, if you're going to buy into this Christian thing, then you're not here accidentally. So whatever challenges that you're looking at out there, first of all, they're not unique. There's always been challenges in every generation in the sense they're not unique. There's always been sin. they may be unique in that you're a generation, but you were here for that reason. Like you didn't accidentally wind up in this time and place in history. God placed you here by his divine plan and said, if you'd like, accept the hope that I give you and then enter into the participation in the renewing of all things, knowing that I will make all things new. And that is one. And now you can look at that horror, that evil, fully awake and fully alive, and not be unmoved by it, but know that it is temporary, that it will be redeemed, that the victory is won. And so now I can enter into it with energy and gusto and say, yeah, I'm going to fight this fight, not because I'm going to fix it, but because the one I serve will, and I get to participate in the fixing. I think that transforms everything. And I think that is not unique. I don't think I've said a single original thought in any of the things that I just laid out. This is all ancient, 2,000 plus year old knowledge that is the very foundation and fabric of the reality of the Christian life. And yet we walk around focusing on everything that's wrong and have a spirit of hopelessness. And to me, that is the grand tragedy. I mean, not that there's evil in the world. That's not surprising to me. The grand tragedy is that the Christians, the ones who ought to know, are succumbing to defeatism and depression because they've forgotten the hope that is the first message. You know, I mean, the defeatism and the depression is only relevant if Christ stayed in the tomb. But he didn't. So from that point forward, everything's changed. And that's the very heart of what we believe. And if you miss that, you just totally don't get the whole thing. And so many of us know that, but then forget to take it to its practical implications, which changes the absolute way you view the world and live.
Mm-hmm. It is so easy for us to forget that this is God's track record for the entirety of the world's existence. This is not, like, none of this is unexpected. None of this is new for him. And when we look at all these evils in the world and we feel unequipped, God looks at us and says, yeah, you can't deal with this on your own. But that's why I'm here, and I'm inviting you to join me in the work that I'm doing. And we, in some tiny ways, a lot of the time, if we look throughout some of the examples through history, we won't actually know how much of a difference or whether or not we made a difference, in what ways or in what people we've made a difference. And we might not know that until eternity, until much later. And that's okay, because we as Christians don't have to worry about how can I maximize only this life and this life alone, because that's all I have. We have the hope of eternity. That's why Paul says in 1 Corinthians that, if we only have this life to live for, then we who are in Christ are the most to be pitied, because we are living our entire lives out of the framework that this life is only a small portion of the grand story of creation that we get to be a part of. And because we know the ending already, we know exactly how God is going to redeem all things. We know that he is going to be victorious over all sin and death, and there will be no more tears shed, and that there will be a new heaven and a new earth without all of the brokenness that we see in the world. We can't even comprehend that, just because every single part of our lives is shaped by the fact that there is brokenness in the world. And so that's one of the most mind-blowing parts about eternity, is that we will be in a new heaven, a new earth that don't have that brokenness. And trying to wrap your head around that is one of the most wild and humbling things that you can do. But I think it's such an important practice for us, because when we see the hopelessness in the world, just trying to circle back around to this conclusion, to the question that we asked at the beginning of why should we have hope? For one, I think if we are in Christ, we have every reason to have hope. We have every reason, because the one who created this world has a perfect plan for this world, and he has invited us to join in it. And so that doesn't mean that we should ignore the brokenness of the world, or we should turn a blind eye, or we should try to just say, somebody else will fix that. No, he invites us to be a part of that. That is what he designed for us to do. He is glorified, and we fulfill our purpose as created beings when we work to address and fight against the darkness and to bring order and justice and right to creation. But we get to hold the outcome of that with open hands and say, we are doing this for God's glory, and however much or little you want to do with my work, that's up to you. And when you can fully understand that that's what we've been created to do, and we can just sit and go in the knowledge that God is redeeming all things, and we get to be a part of that, I think that is a massive source of hope that can and should transform everything about your life. Well, we are excited to introduce this new segment to the show where we feature an Unbound student or alumni who we think is living out what we talk about here on the show and in Unbound's programs pretty often. And we thought that it would be really fun to introduce the team of students that is actually helping us with the podcast right now over the summer. And so we're going to be introducing those to you over the next few weeks. And so for this week, we have Trent Ryder. Trent is a student from Unbound's Ascend program. I believe that you started in the Explore program and have continued up on through. And so we're really happy to have you on and happy we get to introduce everyone to you.
Hey, thanks for having me on. It's an honor to be here.
So, Trent, for your feature, I thought that it would be really fun to tell everybody on the show about the Ridgeline project that you were on. Now, if our listeners are not familiar with Ridgeline, it is one of the four live in-person events in the Ascend program. And basically, teams of Ascend students have 3 days to take on some really ambitious projects, all sorts of different kinds. And so, Trent, the project that you were on was a unique one where you guys were trying to make a radio dramedy. So tell us just a little bit, give us a quick overview of what that project was and how it went at Ridgeline.
So that the general goal of that project was to create a radio drama in less than 72 hours, or right around 72 hours, actually, at Ridgeline, one of Unbound's events. And that was quite a story. So we arrived at Ridgeline. We'd done a little bit of work ahead of time as far as getting work done on the script and designing an overall story that we wanted to follow. We did a script read through the first day and decided that we wanted to rewrite the script and needed to do some work on that area. So that was quite a shock to begin with. Not everything went according to plan. We didn't end up finishing brainstorming the project and only got one scene recorded out of the three that we had planned. So yeah, I've been telling people since then that Ridgeline is kind of a bit of a practice in failure. And since then, we've been able to rewrite the script and develop our own rewritten story that we were able to record at Capstone earlier this year.
So just for reference for everybody listening, that is not typical. Most of the time, if projects at Ridgeline don't necessarily go well, most teams will just say, oh, well, that's a huge bummer, but we're just going to, you know, kind of move on from that. But this team decided, you know what, we did fall short of our goal, but we want to continue on and we want to go in and actually take the time to finish it and take this project all the way through. And so the next event, where normally they're not working on these projects continually, this team decided, let's go ahead and just try to finish this thing out.
Basically, we were able to redeem our project and snatch victory out of the jaws of defeat. And we're still working on it. The project is still in the editing phase. I'm working on that over the summer. And of course, other students will be from the project will be helping as much as they can as well. Still an in-progress sort of thing, so.
Well, I think it's a really cool example of being able to see what could just be taken as a disappointing failure and just picking yourself up and continuing with the project. What do you personally feel like, especially on just kind of your side and vantage point of where you are doing with the project, and especially now as kind of the one who's heading up a lot of the post-production side of things? What are some of the biggest takeaways that you have from the experience?
Yeah, biggest takeaway would be failure is not something that's fatal. It is something that can be recovered from. especially if you have an extra event where you can record together, although that doesn't always happen. Sometimes failure can't be redeemed, and you just have to be willing to accept that things went wrong. Things could be done better next time, but overall, there is sometimes total losses. Leaving Ridgeline, we did kind of have the expectation that we might not finish this recording again, and that we would kind of have to eat humble pie and leave the project without a finished job. But thankfully, that looks like it isn't going to be the case. But yeah, that's probably the biggest takeaway.
Well, that's really cool. I, for one, cannot wait to hear the finished product once you guys have it finished. I think that we'll definitely have to make sure to feature it in the show notes of an episode around the time when it is finished and when we can actually let everybody listen to it. But in the meantime, Trent, thanks for giving us a load of insight into how you've been learning to learn from failure. And we are just really grateful to have you on and grateful to have you part of the podcast team this summer.
Awesome. Thanks for having me on. Again, it was an honor to be here.
Why should we have hope? Because the tomb is empty. And, mm-hmm. and we need to remember that. But in addition, there will always be evil in the world. There will always be pain and suffering, and that is until Christ returns. And yet, we should take hope from the fact that in the midst of that, only 10% of people are suffering from lack of food. In the midst of that, more people have health care. In the midst of that, poverty levels have reduced worldwide. In the midst of that, life expectancy has doubled. It is also not inevitable that evil wins, even in some short-term things, that there is ways to roll that and push that back as God redeems all things. And so we would just ask for you, listeners, to be able to live in some level of that hope, to think about that, to pray about that, to meditate on that, to not turn a blind eye, to live fully awake and fully alive. We don't want you to be naive. You need to confront and see the problems in the world, but to then face those problems with energy, with a smile, and with a lightness of heart, seriously, because the battle's won. And you get to participate in the redemption of all things, giving your life purpose and meaning and usefulness in a way that is both exciting and hopeful. We hope that this is hopeful for you and that you'll catch some of our excitement. If you're interested in learning more about Unbound, we would ask you to go to beunbound.us. And especially as we're talking about this kind of practical training, we might highlight the EQUIP program for you, which is our high school program, and EXPLORE, which is our high school program for 12th graders. Both of those programs do have a significant curriculum of hope as we teach practical skills to high school students. These programs integrate with any curriculum, and they'll work with any kind of homeschool curriculum, and it allows you to learn all the non-academic stuff, time management, task management, study skills, communication skills, conflict resolution skills, those kinds of things. You can go to beunbound.us and click on EQUIP or EXPLORE to learn more about that. Until next time, we'll ask you to be unbound.
Well, thank you for joining us for this episode. And you may have noticed that it's a little bit longer and a little bit different. We've got some additional segments that we have added in. And that is in no small part thanks to a team of podcast student interns that we have brought on for the summer. They have been helping us with brainstorming ideas for how to make this podcast even better and to deliver good, valuable content and to just bring the show up to an even higher level. And so you may notice a few different segments and a few different things that we'll be trying throughout the summer for the show. And so we hope that you stick around and join us for that. And if you have feedback on whether or not you think that these changes are good or bad, you can definitely send us an email. The email will be in the description down below and let us know. But we thank you for joining us for this episode.